Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on.
Closer. Not that close, you peeping toms. Have you no shame? Back off.
Okay, now that we have your undivided attention, we were kind of wondering, what does this do to you?
Hit it, Clay.
Nice data, very strong.
Let's see what it did to Joel.
Mystery Science Theater 3000. The experiment begins with the robot versus the Aztec mummy.
I'm Crow T. Robot from Mystery Science Theater 3000. You are watching Comedy Central. Bite me, it's fun.
Crow, no,
what?
No.
What? I wasn't.
All right, ladies and gents, here we are. Misty, Mike, Insing, and I are reviewing all three eras of ST3K. So, known to the rest of the world as Mystery Science Theater 3000, we are reviewing all three eras, Joel, Mike, and Jonah. So,
yeah, I used to call them to separate them, the Mike-isodes and the Joel-isodes. And the Jonah-isodes doesn't ring off, you know, raw off the tongue too well. But technically, you're supposed to call them experiments instead of episodes, but it just sounds better.
I was the same way when we were reviewing 24. It was like, technically, they call each season a day. So I'm like, so day four is really season four, yada yada. I was like, well, just to, unfortunately, I just go back to just the, how you refer to every show, because I don't want to lose, you know, just all the non-fans with the hardcore fans. You know, I want everyone to be able to follow what I'm talking about. So this is your intro to the podcast, Mike. Not Nelson Insing. You've done some radio work and other
Grand
projects.
Rapids. Grand Rapids in the late 80s to mid 90s. It was volunteer, just did it for fun. But it was, I've still got a lot of the tapes, so I can. It was one of those things where you go in there, oh, you're doing the show and go, oh, I'm messing up. And then you play it, you hear the tape back and say, oh, sounds fine. You sound like a radio DJ. So, you know, it was a good psychological 10 years for me there to.
Totally.
Self-awareness, or whatever you want to say.
Absolutely. So the show ran from 1988 to 2018. So it is going to be renewed again for 2022. So a lot of stuff to look forward to.
Yeah, look for my name in the credits again. I'm in season 11 on one of, there was two episodes in a row where there were similar movies. I can't remember the names. Oh, it's right here. Hang on. Yeah, I think I'm in Wizards of the Lost Kingdom 1 or 2. I can't remember which one. Of course, they're alphabetical by first name, so that's when they're doing the M's. So, but anyway, I was such a fan. I was, you know, back in the day when everyone still had VHS recorders and everything. I used to record it.
Same, but now, my father and both uncles were a fan, and I still have those VHS tapes in my room. They would interview, I was watching a lot of reruns of Sci-Fi Channel, and lo and behold, you know, they introduced me to the Comedy Central era, and So what's the year you first became a fan? I had seen parts of clips around circa like 97, 98, but didn't know what it was. And then I finally knew what it was by 03, 04.
Well, late in season two, when Frank had joined by then, but I was checking, I was like, there was 13 episodes that season. I think I would religiously watch Letterman in those years, and especially viewer mail, because I sent him a letter and kept waiting to see if he... Well, one night after viewer mail, I switched the channel because I'd seen it prior to that for a couple seconds, and I'm going, this is stupid. You know, what are they doing here? They're talking during the movie, and I just thought it was dumb, but it was... It's like something's going on here I'm not seeing. So after viewer mail that night, I switched over to it again, right in the middle of the X Marks the Spot short, which is really kind of cool because that was the spot where I started watching it to the end of the episode.
Right, that's a good point. Short. You definitely had it to where, you know, almost everyone was encountering it just accidentally. So
yeah, Comedy Central was kind of new then. In fact, they had just merged from the Ha channel, and there's a whole history on that. And
it's still all these years been like partially owned by like HBO or something. It's like, because, and it's so wild because it's like they were the original owner and then gave it to Viacom, you know, which is Paramount. So it's very interesting how
most people wasn't just... HBO involved with it too? It was an HBO production.
No, and just Comedy Central. They talked to it was independent, and that was kind of the beauty of it. Just
You're talking about the channel, yeah. Okay.
Well, and just how this show was formed, you know, it's like KTMA TV is now known as CW 23, the Twin Cities in Minneapolis, St. Paul now. So it is so funny how they interviewed him years later in 2016. Yet.
Well, anyway, the end result is the first episode was King Dinosaur with the short X Marks the Spot preceding it. There might have been another short. They have more than one short. But anyway, so by the end of that first show that I watched pretty much all the way through, I never cared about checking to see if Dave Letterman read my letter anymore. You know, I never went back. The next time I watched Letterman, he had aged about 10 years. I hardly recognized him. So, which is odd because he was on 5 nights a week, but I think my late night entertainment was booked at that point because I said, this is something I've never seen before. And yet I can have kind of seen it, you know, because it's all pop culture references. And I picked up on that fairly early.
Okay. But, nice. And it was kind of wild because, you know, this is like, you know, obviously, and the creators have said this multiple times, they were not the first to do just a movie kind of talking during a movie kind of sketch show, and yet they really popularized it. Like, you can't talk about, you know, any of these without someone saying, oh, so just like what they done on, you know, Joe Bob or Spinguli or
Mr.
So
the first time our family went to Cedar Point in 74, there was a late night movie show where they would do skits, and they actually showed The Crawling Hand the night we were down there.
Sweet.
So that was a neat coincidence. In fact, I talked to, when they did a meet and greet with Cinematic Titanic, I mentioned that to Josh Weinstein, and I kind of had him say it was kind of the same kind of show, but it really wasn't. It was just, you know, host. They wouldn't do anything during the movie, but, you know, but it's just, it was funny that it was The Crawling Hand.
Of all movies to pick. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how many of these movies before they aired on here did you actually know?
Mitchell was one. I saw it on I was staying at a friend's house. I don't know if it was on a Friday night, I think. And they aired Mitchell on CBS. I remember we were just out of high school, and we were both kind of shocked. It was a little more graphic at the end of the movie. He shoots the guy on the boat. It was a little more graphic for TV back then. They kind of cut it away, as Mr. Science Theater would do. They would cut out the excessive violence stuff. And I just remember being struck by that. And, you know, my friend laughed when he shot the guy in the leg in the park and stuff like that. It was just your typical,
of guy.
Rockford Files wannabe type of movie, you know.
But way violent.
Yeah, although James Garner is 10 times the actor that Joe Don Baker is. He's going to be after me now. It's still around. But it's interesting, because we could go way back to the KTMA era, just briefly. I was watching, I told you I had a lot of these collectors you could buy behind the scenes videos and stuff. I don't think you can much anymore. Maybe they're on YouTube. But then, actually I was watching the scrapbook, which the official fan club would offer. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of KTMA host segments on there. And I realized watching that KTMA era that year, it's what, 21 episodes. It's very similar to the Simpsons shorts.
Yeah, very true. Everyone forgets Simpsons was airing on shows and Sesame Street before it became a big show. And kind of it's so funny because J. Elvis Weinstein, you know, the reason he added the J is because he kept being confused with an actual writer on the Simpsons name, Elvis Weinstein. It's just so funny how, but similar kind of brand, like we were having a lot of experimental stuff in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
By 93, you had a bunch of these, you know, Twin Peaks, X-Files type shows and all these other anthology shows that were trying to be the next Tales from the Crypt. And it was just even funnier how Conan O'Brien, you know, has said on his recent podcast, when he started up his show, you know, he didn't want to be just another, you know, wannabe of Carson or Letterman, or he wanted no part of the Letterman Leno ratings war that went back and forth. He wanted to be kind of more like Pee-wee's Playhouse, because he came, you know, from Simpsons and SNL writing staff. And I think much in the same way here, I mean, Joel never, you know, and Trace and with their producer, Jim, you know, they never knew how far this was going to go. But once they got picked up, you know, they're like, hey, everyone places.
Well, KTMA, they were still working out what they were trying to do. And the same thing with the Simpsons shorts. They had a, you know, basic idea. I think Sam Simon later created the whole town of Springfield.
Yeah, and
Matt Grain was different back then. Family and Grandpa and Krusty the Clown, a couple other characters. Mm-hmm. But there was some similarities that struck me that back then, at least the clip I saw, Trace was doing a Gregory Peck voice as this character, very similar to the way Dan Castellaneta was doing a Walter Matthau voice for Homer.
Yeah, they were just picking random, you know, impressions of actors they liked and just sticking with it, or then just saying, all right, on to the next sketch, it's going to be something even weirder. And
yeah, and then later they were more comfortable with the character and kind of incorporated their own personality into it a little more, like with Crow and Forrester, with Trace. And then, absolutely.
Trace is kind of the unofficial host in a way, because he is, and even the other future Mads, you know, like Pearl and Bobo, but...
So, yeah, they're the director. Yeah, you're going to do this now. Yeah, okay, take four, you know. They're making them do this stuff. And then there's also a similarity. Well, for one thing, those Simpsons shorts are very crude, and the robots are very crude in the KTMA.
And you get that it's a kind of camp, because, like, everyone's basically playing, like, 5 to 7 different roles, whether it's a guest spot. And so for those who watch, usually, you know, you have a goofy TV, you know, theme that tells you, you know, it's just a show, you should really just relax. And then, you know, you find, again, it's a janitor trapped in space with two robots he's created just so he can survive these awful movies. If he leaves the theater, he gets shocked or oxygen deprived by these mad scientists who really love torturing him with these cheesy movies. It's an altogether perfect comedy premise, and it is one that I have tried multiple times to explain to people, and you have to get them within the first sentence, otherwise they tune out and say, what the fuck are you talking about? This can't be something that was good, or, you know.
Yeah.
If I've never heard of it, it's like, you've heard of it, or you've seen it, but you probably didn't know what it was, you know. And I would hear people even mention it casually, but again, they didn't know what it was.
Hey, Mr. Lonely. It's party! party time! Grab a date and a skimpy outfit for the intergalactic go-go party that is Mystery Science Theater 3000. Get down and do the jerk with three of your funniest friends, and we'll give you plenty of cheese.
Now I can take my clothes off and run around. Woo!
Get lucky with Mystery Science Theater 3000. Tonight at midnight, here at Comedy Central, the only all-comedy network.
It was years before we would just, you know, now we have Twitch, which is basically for gamers and people can talk shit or join chats. But, you know, this was before, you know, the internet was taken off and the right people would see the right kind of stuff.
Right.
In a way, I don't think even Adult Swim would exist the same way on Cartoon Network without stuff like this, because this was just the right kind of experimentation. You know, this would come on at 9 or 10 at night, sometimes have a marathon. So it was on Comedy Central, and then moved to Sci-Fi Channel, and then moved to Netflix, and now is going to be on its own created streaming app.
You can probably watch it on Twitch. Well, we'll find out how they're going to do it. I think if you're a Kickstarter backer, you get to watch it firsthand. There was one other similarity with the KTMA seasons, with the Simpsons shorts. The Simpsons shorts were about 3 minutes. Well, for each of those experiments in the KTMA, there's about 3 minutes of riffs because it was very sparse. It wasn't written. You know, the emphasis was on the movies more than
And Hodgson,
the other,
you know,
seasons.
You see in all and the press kits and other stuff, all he was known for prior to this was
SNL. And
yeah, doing an SNL appearance and guest
Letterman.
Starring on, yeah, Letterman. So, yeah, he.
And some of the movies weren't all that bad. Well, it's also where the Gamera obsession with Joel started. There's five Gamera episodes, and of course I redid them later again, and there's one more coming out in season 13. So, but City on Fire, SST Death Flight, they're kind of classic 70s TV disaster movies. They're not all that bad.
All right, so let's backtrack. So this began, you know, again, on the local KTMA, and this was referred to as season zero. We are introduced to Hodgson as Joel Robinson, which is a wink to Lost in Space. The comedian, he prefers to be called a comedian because he doesn't really consider himself an actor, but he said he was inspired by A Silent Running and Lost in Space. And he has the talking gumball machine that is Tom Servo and the robotic chicken, no coincidence, Crow T Robot. He has sent movies by the mad scientist, Dr. Clayton Forrester, and his henchman, Dr. Earhart. Yes, like you say, this was basically the test run. It's don't be confused with the IMDb listing, which lists it, you know, by actual numbers. It's technically season zero because, you know, it wasn't official yet.
Yeah, Joel has said they're not canon. They're like dress rehearsals. Yeah.
Right, it's like the SNL.
I mean, 21 times, but you know, yeah, they were figuring it out. You know,
there are a bunch of these movies though, like you say, that you're surprised they never got them back again, because they're just like so. You can find any of them now uncut on some of those like Mill Creek, Anchor Bay, you know, 10 movie packs, and it's just so hysterical because you're like, I don't really want to watch them uncut, but I'm glad there's a copy of it out there for those who do. You know.
Yeah.
I'm surprised some of them they didn't do again, but they did basically all the Gamera stuff then and there, and it was interesting because the Superdome and the other movies that would have been TV films for old school ABC, NBC back in the day were good picks in terms of just kind of,
you know, and it's also about the time those types of movies were starting to show their age, you know. You know, as everything does, if, you know. Not
oh,
everything.
Yeah. And all kinds of actors who, you know, at the beginning of their career, so of course they're in it.
Yeah, Billy Crystal's in the SST Death Flight, I think, or I think he's in that one.
I'm going to have to go through KTMA era again, but I do recall it being, you got to be in the right kind of mood, and it is kind of, like you say, a rough draft, but it's still very impressive for a show, which, again, you know, was just on a local antenna channel back in the day.
Yeah, it's like there's certain, if you're a Bob Dylan fan, there's certain albums you don't want to listen to a lot, but, you know, you dig them out. It's that kind of thing.
It really is.
Well, I'm not trying to compare the two, but you know what I mean.
Yep.
I did. I think my favorite was probably The Last Chase. The other, they've only done one other movie with Lee Majors. I grew up with a $6 Million Man. So that
yeah,
was
kind of, they did a bunch.
It was kind of a fun movie. You know, it was a road trip type of movie.
There was that. I think there was one called Star Princess, which was basically a lot of compilation episodes.
Cosmic Princess.
That's the one. Yeah, it was like from Space 1999 of all movies. And
is that what that was? I guess it was.
Much like Man from U.N.C.L.E., not everyone got all those same shows, so it's just so funny how, again, whatever's just there, we're gonna just have it on and we're gonna joke around it. And you know, it is interesting how Erhard portrayer, you know, Josh Weinstein, no relation to Harvey, but he basically wanted to kind of improvise a lot more, and they wanted to actually just say, hey, we got to script it if we want to actually kind of land and be funny. And there's a bit of both, and you know, the robots didn't look complete, but it was very interesting though how this show as a whole kind of just showed, hey, there's plenty of other puppet shows that aren't made by Jim Henson, and this is pretty much number one.
Yeah, and I got it was Minneapolis aired it, right?
Yep.
And I got to think the like Joel says, the right people will get it isn't really being smug. He's saying there's an audience for this. And I would think that there are some people in Minneapolis who go, wow, we got something really unique here. You know, judging by the phone calls they got on the answer machine and stuff like that. So it started catching on early, you know.
Totally. And then you see other movies on there like Superdome. And there's even this one with Robert Vaughn where they basically have to like infiltrate Area 51.
Hangar 18,
that's the one. Yeah, and I know that was a popular conspiracy movie back in its day. It's a cult movie. And there's this other one which dealt with violent ants. I don't even know why it had an R rating, but apparently it was bloody enough back in the day.
Yeah, that was a strange one. It was a lot of close-ups of like an ant farm or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What was that called? It was I'm looking at the list here. Phase 4, I think.
That's the one. Yep.
Yeah.
And it really is interesting how essentially they were set for life, but yeah, they just they had to take a whole season to just kind of be word of mouth and other people just noting this. And it got even more just kind of interesting how, you know, when they finally got the pickup by Comedy Central, you know, the producer was Jim Mallon, who also voiced the talking robot Gypsy. And he's kind of hated now because basically he kind of screwed him over on the rights. But back then, you know, here's the comedy.
He's Yoko.
Yeah, Yoko on the show. But it is interesting how he was able to pick someone's brain and someone at Comedy Central said, sure, why not, you know, and we'll give you an extra budget for extra, you know.
But he got the show on the air, so you gotta give him some credit, you know.
I'm gonna give him credit there. And
he's a big part of that.
They came up with the props for this by just going for various dumpsters and using other just random stuff. I mean, the fact that Crow is a bowling pin, you know, sliced open, and that's his mouth, and you got
lacrosse helmet, yeah.
Yeah, and a soap dish for part of the back of his neck, and servo again. It's a barrel of monkeys mixed in with a gumball machine, and he hovers around. And it was interesting though too, just how any of these seasons you can often just look at the various bloopers that make it in, and that just adds to the what a campy show it is. It's like, I'm not gonna roast him, that's good.
Yeah, his head, Serval's head will fall off, and they'll either not say anything or they might mention it, or yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was those couple shows where he had a rectangular head. Remember those? There's one or two.
On occasion, yeah. And
they said he had a haircut or something. That was kind of strange. I think they did it because they thought he was blocking too much of the screen or something. I don't know. But
I think so.
That didn't last.
And then production was based in Hopkins, Minnesota, and then they moved to Eden Prairie.
Okay.
For the rest of the 80s to 90s run. And so, yeah, for tackling the rest of Joel's sessions. So, yeah, he hosts the official seasons 1 through 5 on Comedy Central. And often they talk about how season 4 is when it really just was hot stuff. It was taken off. I have no issue with any of these seasons. I think this is comedy gold.
Yeah, season 1 tends to get ripped on by the fans because, well, you got a different Servo voice. It's still right. Josh.
And Josh, you know, was playing him, and then Frank played him briefly, and then they finally said, let's replace him with Kevin Murphy because Frank is going to be playing the new scientist, okay. TV's Frank. And it's just so funny how, yeah, Kevin was just basically the assistant guy and even appearing in the sketch, but yeah, he's like, okay, you got to play.
Kevin took the character and really ran with it. He you know, he's got a good voice, and of course he's got a great singing voice, you know.
He really had perfect kind of pop culture knowledge and singing and charisma, and Trace was great with the snarky remarks as both, you know, Crow, and then being just scenery chewing as Dr. Forrester. And it's just so funny how, you know, he was also the art director and everything, and he and Kevin always would joke, is like, when we love the show, but one thing we don't miss is putting our backs out doing the puppeteering and holding up these damn things.
Yeah,
hard stuff, man.
And season 1, of course, they started to write, and again, people aren't that crazy about season 1, but to me, starting in late in season 2, I wanted more and more. You know, I think I was down to 3 episodes and they were done for the season. Of course, it reruns. But when season 1 episodes would pop, it was like bonus. It's like, okay, now I'm still learning more about the show here. And this is a little different approach. You got a different Servo. The set looked different. And mm-hmm. and so those were always, had I started season 1, I probably, oh, season 2 is much better. But it was nice to, oh, are they going to show any more of those? Because you wanted to see all of them, you know, once you got really into the mm-hmm. show.
Yeah. Who's on first? These guys. But yeah, I've watched a bunch of the space and early horror films from season 1. Season 2, I do agree. It's kind of where they decide to get even more experimental. And then, yeah, by season 3 through 5, they were pretty much on a roll of pick yep. all sorts of movies, pick a bunch of Oscar winning movies that are under different names, do again, you know. So I think they really by that point decided, you know, what really got them in the door was definitely with the monster movies, you know, doing the Godzilla and the camera stuff. But mm-hmm. It's so wild how the Godzilla stuff is like, Toho is not a fan of its properties being mocked, so those episodes will never see the light of day unless you get them, you know, through a fan,
unless sources. You recorded them. Yeah.
It really is funny how this was one of many shows where it encouraged the, you know, the keep circulating the tapes thing is so true, because that's kind of, you know, we're so used to it now where everything, there's a digital copy of it somewhere on the internet or through a third party site. But, you know, back then that wasn't always the case. So it was very interesting how, I mean, I've even seen people who have taken some of the unofficial Cinematic Titanic and Riff Tracks knockoff spinoff projects. And they, you know, synced it up with the movies they were making fun of or remastered. So same kind of deal here where they would remaster the episodes from VHS to DVDs and then make their own like interactive DVDs. So there's even a few fans out there who have gone the distance to even, shall we say, basically they remaster the episodes with the audio of the show. So there was one guy who went all out. He decided, I'm going to give it the best possible treatment by going to the actual source of these movies. And it wasn't easy because some of those, you know, it's like you can't actually get an actual VHS or DVD copy uh-huh. of. So but yeah.
Then they'd re-engineer the riffing with the movie again to balance it out more or something, or?
Well, yeah, like you're hearing all the audio of the thing, but they're giving you a high def version of the movie.
Oh, okay. Because yeah, we're back. Yeah, it wasn't okay. I got
it
you.
Is interesting. I know how,
especially with the picture and everything.
I've never seen a show which had just more dedicated fans. Not
yeah.
This is years before Josh Whedon and all these other.
Well, and technology's caught up too with it. You didn't have that kind of. You couldn't have done that back in the day when they aired. Yeah.
Yeah. There were even fan films before that was really a thing, is like people would make up their own episodes and upload them online pretending to be the host. It's very interesting too how by this point, you know, in these seasons, in these first five seasons, you know, Servo is kind of just instantly just telling movies they must end.
And yeah.
Joel is making a lot of obscure references to, you know, hot TV shows at that time. And Trace is doing a lot of, you know, as Crow is doing a lot of voiceovers of pop culture characters. And it's okay if some stuff flies over everyone's head, because half the time they forget the jokes, and other times, you know, there's just some jokes that are, you know, it was funny back then and you might laugh because it is well done and delivered, but you don't necessarily know what they're referencing. But I think most of us have just really just embraced these kinds of shows, because it's like there just was something about, you're watching a bunch of movies with a bunch of hecklers, but they're also
they're funny, and I remember saying at the time, it's smart funny,
and the movie selections during these years are pretty good. I mean, taking all these movies that were done by Sandy Frank, who would take a lot of Japanese shows and then carelessly edit them together to where the plots were a little uncomprehensible, and there's your movie. You don't know what you just saw, but it's a lot of goofy space outfits and people with laser guns. Go ahead.
I was going to say one more thing on season one. We're off the track a little bit, but I used to see movies all the time. I'd go to the movies just go to the movies, you know. Uh-huh. But I'm always amazed at where they find, you know, Monos is the prototypical example, where they found some of these movies. And some of them, I think, actually aired on TV for the first time. I think the Dead Talk Back was one. Was never picked up on anything. But
I'm sure
season one had Robot Monster, which I had seen at a bad film festival in town. You know, they show Plan 9, Glenn or Glenda, Robot Monster. I think those.
It's wild how trashy movies were being seeked out, but they still just weren't as big as they are now. Now it's second nature. People say, we're having a bad movie night, come on over to our house, or we got this festival which shows cheese or intentionally bad movies. But at this time, it was kind of just only just known to people who just were part of the drive-in theater scene
and bought the Golden Turkey Award book, which Joel has mentioned as being an influence on the show.
That really was. There was a lot of people were embracing the Razzies and other cheese. And at this point, it was just a matter of, hey, this is part of comedy. We're just going to do something just really surreal. You're watching a movie that you either find amusing or really hate. And then, yeah, you got these guys. So you're reacting to not only the movie, but their reaction. And then, you know, each commercial break, they're going to show, you know, a viewpoint of the satellite in space that's getting all these transmissions, or the mad scientist facility that's in them. And then you're going to have a segment where they take a break from the movie and they're talking about what they've just watched. And often it's a bunch of recurring gags like, hey, you know, this character who walks funny, or this movie that keeps having these kinds of elements of it. And or we don't have a Slow the Plot Down was another recurring one they did, or
the robots have questions with Joel about why did this happen, what's going on here with this, and you'd have to explain things like this, the famous 60s chess set, that kind of stuff.
You definitely get a gist of what would you talk about if you were trapped in space and had nothing to talk about except bullshit. So yeah, it's like they come up with their own games and other stuff, and
they get a little loopy.
Lots of dress up in costumes, and often by the third act, they'll have one of the puppet portrayers, or in other cases, you know, Jim or even Frank. And before he was the host, Mike will just show up, and they're dressed as a character from the movie. And those are just comedy gold, because just like,
like the Incredible Shrinking Man, the opposite, the
Glenn Manning,
Manning, which was a little bit, it never works. If you're doing a comedy skit, don't be chewing on an apple. You know, it always annoys me. Remember, he was kind of chomping while he was talking, you know.
I don't know, man. I was just digging the camp, but yeah, it's like.
But oh, didn't he like almost pass out in the middle, like the overacting in the movie?
Glenn Manning, I think, character? So. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they that's the other thing too, is like the reason they're on point is because, again, they've watched this shit fest multiple times, and you see in one of the special making of specials years later how they would, again, you know, they'd have someone dictating what they were saying during each session, and they're just laughing about it together. So during this time though, it won a Peabody Award in 1993. So
There's stuff going on in this show that it's not your typical TV show. You know, I remember when I first moved out.
If you win the Peabody, it means honoring the most powerful, enlightening, invigorating stories. So
I've missed a lot of network TV shows over the years. I like Seinfeld and a handful of other ones, but a lot of it's just, okay, I've seen that. You know, I don't know how I'm bothered. I don't want to watch this every week, you know.
No, okay. And it seemed like they just re-aired a bunch of stuff, so half the time you would probably tape the same episode a few different times, and
yeah,
it got even more interesting how, you know, when you start seeing the Cable Ace Award nominations, and later on near the middle of its fame, the Emmy noms, is like someone was really actually watching these and really finding some of this humor insightful, and you're like, I've never seen any kind of crazy fun show like this before. So.
Yeah, there was one more thing similar to The Simpsons. The Simpsons does a lot of pop culture references too. Like Mystery, it's more about the cartoon characters and stuff. But
in many ways, this is a live action cartoon. So yeah.
Instead of working with bad movies, they work with cartoon characters, but they throw in that kind of stuff. Now, season two, I wrote some notes here. Frank shows up, of course. And Frank and Trace, that's just some classic. It's Three Stooges, but more clever, you know?
Yeah, they really had a great Laurel and Hardy persona. Frank would make me laugh almost as much as the bots, just because it's like, he essentially is just going around and just, you know, in many ways, he could easily escape just like, you know, Joel could if he really wanted to, but he just doesn't. In this case, he doesn't have the smarts, and he wants to matter, and you know, he wants to do all kinds of things, and he's basically an experiment in and of itself. He's a dog on a leash, and
I like how the first time you see him, he's basically taking your order at the drive-through window, you know.
Yeah, Forrester is always using him as a punching bag, and
I guess he did actually work at Arby's, Frank Conniff. So
I think so. Yeah, he got fired. Yeah, all these guys were from the stand-up scene, and you know, Kevin, who played Servo, had just been helping behind the scenes at this, you know, TV and broadcasting, and would often do a bunch of skits playing a fake reporter. That's right. So it was
right.
Really,
Kevin also shows up in that season too. That's right.
And many ways they, you know. They took all kinds of people who just were doing cheap makeup and video, and at times it almost feels like they're filming on videotape. I don't think they were, but it's still pretty interesting how it all just clicks together. And like you say, like during this whole era, they would start the show off on Joel's era by having, you know, invention exchanges. And I got to say, that was really the heart of the show for me, is like, before you get this punching bag of a show that has you, you know, forced to watch a movie with them, you're going to at least have their own storyline of its own. It's not relying on just the stock footage, on just the pre-existing movie they're going to watch. You're also in the comedy that ensues of them talking or reacting to the movie. You're also got this whole predicament where, hey, you know, each week we're going to come up with some random gadget that might be helpful or might be even cool in some ways, or might be absolutely useless, but it's
the unhappy meal. Yeah.
Yeah. It's basically our homework. We got to come up with something. And
so there's a lot of little story arcs going on too.
And they were just so witty, just what they came up with, and sometimes even inspired by random pop culture stuff. And that always made up for it, because half the time the Mads would actually cheat or just take their idea and just say, I have the better one.
A little Gilligan's Island where somebody would show up at the ship but then leave and they'd never see him again. You know, they never got rescued.
Just to show there's some kind of outside life.
So season two was the first, after I watched King Dinosaur, of course, I tuned in religiously after that. So the first full episode I saw was First Spaceship on Venus.
Nice.
Which is kind of, it's a strange, it's got a weird tint to it. It's a, well, it was dubbed too. It was, it's a strange little movie. But then there's some good movies in season two. Wild Rebels, Side Hackers is one of my favorites.
Oh, and almost all these movies, you, if they had a bigger budget, they could be so much more. And at the same time, some of them are halfway watchable. Like Operation Kid Brother is a fun James Bond knockoff that could be better if the plot were a little more coherent. I Cues My Parents is a fun gangster movie if you get past the propaganda that parents aren't, you know, are harsh on their kids and, you know, kids are going to grow up to be criminals. It's like, there's so many of them that are halfway there, but just not completely.
I love that riff where, and I Accuse My Parents, where the police show up and it looks like the kid shot somebody and Joel yells out, I Accuse My Parents!
You know, right.
Incorporate, you know, just, that's one of his favorite episodes too. And, you know,
I bet it is.
I love that when they do the takeoff on the musical number in the SOL, you know, and the,
right. And yeah, so many of these movies also sum up the kind of stuff that was coming out at that time where producers would get greedy and just put random material together. Like you got Robot versus the Aztec Mummy, which is basically a hidden robot movie mixed in with a hidden mummy film, and neither really connects with one another. And then Cave Dwellers is another Conan the Barbarian kind of send up, which is pretty messy, but kind of silly and fun in its own right. And then City Limits is another one of those various Escape from New York, Mad Max kind of films where just everyone has like a super
Jim Cottrell.
Yeah, and they're running away from evil corporations and they're teenagers, so we have to buy into the fact that they can somehow kick a lot of ass even though they're just kids. And
there was a lot of biker movies.
Lots of biker movies.
In season two, especially Wild Rebels, Side Hackers, and Hellcats.
Hellcats, and that's where they pretty much got pickier. It's like, most of these are going to have a rape or some nudity or language, so we got to, we can't show this all on TV. And it is funny how they would have to,
which they probably prepackaged that way to begin with, yeah.
Most of them definitely were, especially Mitchell and later Mike stuff. You could tell that they just had a TV edit of it. And they just had to do with it what they could, but sometimes they had to do a little extra editing because sometimes, you know, it was just being shown in after hours and no one was really complaining. But Pod People is also interesting because it does get pretty violent near the end. It's what starts off as an ET clone later becomes kind of an extra, you know, alien type movie. It's like, geez, talk about a bunch of a confusing.
That was a really strange European attempt at ET, I think.
And
I'm assuming it was post ET. It probably was.
It was. That's what the producers reported is saying. They wanted to cash in on ET and Alien.
And of course, they always have, a lot of these movies, there's always a band, and that was one of the worst. You know, Flying Over Trout. You remember?
And
it stinks. Yeah.
Plenty of these have movies have characters who are musicians, and so they get to make fun of the costumes, the soundtrack, and just other unusual music talent who somehow got landed in on this movie, which wasn't, you know, good. And they do it with almost everything. They will often remark on semi-famous people or people who look like other famous people.
Now, I got to think the most famous singer or performer in any of the movies has got to be Little Richard and Kathleen.
I was just
going to
say that.
Yeah, that's the season two one again. That's one of my favorites.
There's plenty of those guys who they find in plenty of these movies, and they were just taking a break from some popular Gilligan's Island type show. We'll get to even some of the other guys who appear later on. And I really did think they really made a difference when post-fame, you know, post-Joel, post Mike, when they started actually having just actors who were in these movies host the various marathons, and just, you know, a play on the word Turkey Day.
Yeah.
It was like, we're going to watch some turkeys on Thanksgiving and tune in. Set your videotape recorder. And the bumpers in between them are also funny because they just had so much, just, they made it look like they were having the live hosting duties and interactions with fan panels. So this, I would tie easily with Babylon 5 and X-Files, is just instantly responding to just a giant network show through the internet.
Well, season 3, I got my notes, was the first long season since KTMA. I think it's 20-something.
They did, and like 20.
They had the Gamera run. All the Gamera movies are in season 3.
Yeah, and I think that was definitely when everyone started, you know, setting the videotapes to record. It's like, it's, and and for many of us, that was how we first saw some of those movies. If we didn't see them on antenna channels, we definitely saw them on shows like these that would do monster creature feature hosting, you know, movies. And part of the fun was always just, how long does it take before you see the monster carnage or mayhem happen? How, what kind of a goofy plot or soundtrack is it, is shown on screen? And this is definitely where they get used to just making fun of some of the recurring characters who are in some of these goofy movies. And I mean, just the fact that even Servo starts having a pet turtle who he names Tibby, I'm like, that's great. You know, now you're...
Well, I was kind of, oh God, another Gamera movie, plus you see him in KTMA, but they're all very, pretty much very different. One's black and white, and there's different... Gamera's the recurring character, but there's a different cast, you know?
And they don't grow tired of them until near the end, where there's like, yeah, these plots are making less sense, so therefore we're tuning out.
I used to use hello, that exchange between two women in one of the Gamera movies. Hello, thank you, remember that?
Oh yeah, yeah.
I actually put that on my answer machine when I had an answer machine at one point for about a week, and I got rid of it because it was too, people would call it, was too confusing, but you know, thank you, hello, you know. That was a nice little run, and then they'd riff on it, hello.
Hey, that must have been good for the telemarketers. They'd be like, oh,
there's a recurring thing where they repeat stuff and it works, like bang, bang, you know.
I like you, that's why I'm going to kill you last, which is like a take on an Arnold Schwarzenegger line. But yeah, they do plenty of other ones where often, I mean, you just knew, I mean, yes, they do stuff any of us could do, but they do it so well, especially with the credits. The time.
And then it'll pop up later in the movie again, and it'll do a callback. They call those,
they'll definitely do callbacks. They would start recognizing the producers and other stuff, and you're like, oh boy, another one of these kinds of movies. We haven't seen him since this movie or that movie.
Only a select few TV shows reached the pinnacle of the fifth season. Now one of Comedy Central's own takes its place among them.
Camera 3, get off the track. Camera 3, out there!
It's Mystery Science Theater 3000, season number 5 of the show where the worst movies ever made are given the respect they deserve.
Good God, I'm ugly.
Watch Mystery Science Theater 3000, Saturday at 7, only at Comedy Central.
So it was good to see that they were aware, especially before they got to later eras where they would play it out of order, so the joke would only halfway make sense, but... Like you said, yeah, it was really good.
That story arc in the sci-fi years, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I like. Some people didn't like that, but I like those.
It's apples and oranges. It's a whole different kind of comedy. So, yeah, I mean.
Even though they were kind of forced into it, I think they still made it work.
It really did. And
you know what? By that time, you wanted something a little different for the show, too, so that it worked there in that regard.
Oh, totally. So, and the kinds of unusual movies, you know, they do a good roster of switching it all up each year, whereas like, okay, we're gonna start out I mean, it also helped that sometimes you would get in the mood as just saying anything was fair game really at that point. So whether it was something that was acclaimed at the time but looks cheesy now, like Commander Cody shorts, you know, it's like, well, same deal. It's like your grandpa probably grew up on those, but has he seen them lately? You know, he might still like them, and the rest of you will say, well, that's entertaining, but not necessarily for all the right reasons, you know.
I remember when the first Batman Michael Keaton movie came out, I had older coworkers, oh, that was a short. As we want to riff tracks to those Batman shorts from the 40s, I guess.
Yeah, is and realizing what politically incorrect language was used back then. It's like,
well, I remember saying he just has a car. It's not a Batmobile, it's just a car. Yeah, but it was a cool car. No, it wasn't.
Yeah. And with Cody, I mean, it helped that I had seen The Rocketeer right around the same time, but it was just so funny how, you know, you look at it and you're
what
does Cody really have other than just a jetpack? And
how do his legs stay straight as he's flying?
Yeah, they would make fun of stuff like that. And,
why does it burn his butt? Yeah.
Right. And a lot of the times that would get them in the mood for when they see a bigger movie and they're like, they're harder on it because its plot is so sped up to where they start doing the whole, you know, slow the plot down type of gags. It's like if they don't want it to end, then they just want it to slow down so they can actually digest it and understand what's going on. But they get pretty good at also just tackling a bunch of these other movies that pretty much have an alien or a giant lizard, or I mean, even with when you get to some of the other ones like the Atomic Brain and just other stuff, is like, it's really just interesting just seeing. I mean, they even have those characters, the mole people, who again are these scientists who are giant moles, and it's just so funny how those characters later, you know, there was a movie called The Mole People that aired on Sci-Fi, and it's like there's a throwback to that kind of movie. It's like so wild.
They were projecting ahead, and they're basically mimes.
Totally.
I just wrote a couple notes for each season. Marooned, I like Marooned. A lot of people, was it the famous thing where Dennis Miller said they did a good movie? No, the point was it was.
It's been airing a lot more frequently on some movie channels nowadays, and it's like you say, it's just a slow moving movie, so it's like
the astronauts trapped in space, which is a perfect movie for them to riff on because that's what they are, you know.
Yeah, I think Trace said if he had to look at it now, he probably wouldn't riff it then, but he's like, again, he said it many a times, he does not have any doubts or regrets about riffing anything. He's like, well,
yeah,
it's what we're doing, so we're gonna do it. There's something goofy about it, so let's tackle it. And
what, well, half the fun is, okay, you try, I've tried this before, okay, I'm gonna see if I can not laugh at something. It doesn't take long, I'm laughing again, you know.
It really doesn't.
And it's like you're trapped, it's like you're sent to your room and you're trying to entertain yourself.
Whatever you gotta do. If and
you know, when you were a kid, they'd send you to room, but I always find something fun to do up there, you know.
And it helped that they were also just kind of bringing awareness of all these kinds of movies, what we've all kind of thought to ourselves when we'd go to a video store or even a library to check something just casual out for family movie night, and half the time come back just, oh wow, what the hell was that? I get to pick the next movie. And so we always would kind of talk to, you know, during a movie here and there, but it, you know, you'd have to, you know, press the pause button and say, okay, you know, stop, you got to pay attention, you know.
I like the drunk DJ character in the giant Gila monster. He was like, oh, he's a DJ. He was basically a drunk, and he crashed his car or something. They helped him out and then he winds up, hey, kid, you know, he's this whole gang of teenagers, and he's like, you know, it's like this cult guy just telling them what to do at the party. And so here's a record we're going to hear now. And, you know, yeah, remember that?
Yeah, totally. And
then that whole thing
with Gila Monster and plenty of those other ones were just swamp creatures are just perfect examples of movies where, you know, anyone can make a movie back then. As long as they got it distributed back in the day. And so you do definitely see a mixture of movies that are basically the 50s versions of people experimenting with their uncle's video camera.
Yeah. And then that whole bit when he's singing the song to the little crippled girl, that was so astutely bad. Oh,
so bad. And so they do plenty of other stuff, like, again, yeah, Rocket Ship, XM, and
I was fascinated by Evil Crow in the Fire Maidens of Outer Space. It was actually suspenseful.
They did a good job. You kept seeing
him sneaking into the theater.
Yeah. By season three through five, they got way more comfortable at having interruptions by Gypsy and other characters that continue all throughout the rest of the show. But
and it wound up being a takeoff on Aliens, you know, get away from here, you bitch, remember?
That was a lot of fun, and there was always like some, you know, I think, how many times has Servo blown up his head by accident or Crow fought someone evil? And this is before they did all the various, you know, later years where they would make fun of Star Trek and Planet of the Apes and Twilight Zone even. But here, I mean, they're just on fire because, I mean, they did all sorts of, it was just so fun seeing kind of like Pee-wee's Playhouse where they would just talk to the newsletter and the fan mail. And
I never watched Pee-wee's Playhouse, but he did the fan letters too.
Similar stuff, and definitely in specials. But I mean, for the most part, it was just cool just seeing a character with puppets, you know, talk to the camera. And
yeah,
it helped that they would actually, it was so fun how they would joke which famous people are actually fans of this show, and some you can confirm, others it's just them joking around. But I definitely got an Animaniacs vibe from it after a while, just seeing just these guys just all be playful. And I really also dig, by the time they get to the final fifth season of Joel's era, it's great to see them take on just even more bizarre sword and sorcery or sandal stuff, like the Hercules movies, and just even more just bizarre horror sci-fi and space type stuff that they got away from it, because like first few seasons they couldn't help themselves, you know. If they weren't doing Commander Cody, they were often just having like a clip from like a PSA or General Hospital or just some other kind of weird obscure thing that you might have understood better if you saw it back in the day. But I love how they got away from it that after a while and just said, let's just go with a pretentious, you know, educational short or
yeah,
a cartoon.
Oh, the shorts. We haven't really talked about the shorts. That's a big part of the show too. Some of those are amazing.
And it really is kind of wild too how nowadays no one really thinks of a short. They would think about it if there was like a DVD special feature, like a prologue for a famous show while you're waiting in between seasons for a premiere. There was often a Pixar short shown before the main feature. But yeah, everyone kind of grew out of the whole, you know, show a Warner Brothers cartoon before the main coming attraction or just something else by the same company or even a double feature. Just everyone was getting out of kind of that vibe, and it was so cool that they kind of just still make it feel like it's an actual theater that could exist. It's just, it's in space.
when I was a junior high or high school, I came up with an idea for a movie called Educational Film, and it would just be a bunch of educational short parodies. I even wrote a song on piano for it. You know, I'm not gonna play it, but I never came to fruition. But it, so watching those educational, somebody did finally make fun of educational shorts. I think SCTV used to do a little bit of that too.
And good callback, because I would watch the show, and they would show the Comedy Central around the same time would actually be showing reruns of SCTV.
They were on there.
And so it was just so funny. I'd see that in between.
Preteen World, that was kind of close to an educational short thing.
Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
I do feel like this has inspired all kinds of comedy in some way, shape, or another. I definitely have seen lots of Easter eggs for video games that incorporate something that's like, yeah, it's definitely would exist on this kind of a zany show. I think Red Dwarf owes a lot to this also, you know.
I've heard of Red Dwarf too. I've never seen that one. I got to catch up on some of these.
It's pretty historical, but same kind of campy thing where it was just a parody of Star Trek and Doctor Who kind of, and it was made in Britain. And
speaking of Star Trek, the fifth season, I'm not going back, Jim, which isn't in the episode or isn't in that Star Trek episode. That line is never said, but it works. You feel like it should have been in that episode.
Wait. You're talking original Star Trek?
No, they did one of the season five episodes.
A riff. Okay, yeah.
Where Crow was hanging upside down and they didn't want to leave the planet, or Spock didn't want to leave the planet. I can't remember what the Star Trek episode
was. Oh, yeah, that was a great episode. And they
But they learned later that line was never said in the episode. But now it feels like it's in there. And it works for that episode. I'm not going back, Jim.
They definitely were huge movie fans. And I mean, seeing around this time, just the ongoing skit where, you know, Mike is either playing a janitor or some random pizza guy. At this point, he was just playing Torgo from the Manos movie, and who later becomes Torgo the White, who takes Frank to second Banana Heaven in later seasons. But at that time, it was cool just seeing him play the host of Biography.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember the guy's name.
The guy's name was Jack Perkins. Yeah.
Jack Perkins. And he also would be the host of the Mystery Science Theater Hour.
Yes. And just so funny how he just, at that point, he was just known on local TV. And it's just so funny how he actually was married to a gal named Mary Jo, coincidentally. But yeah, no, he was spoofed on SNL and by Harry Shearer, The Simpsons, at an art exhibit, and then Daryl Hammond, of all people.
I'm looking at the episode guide. The episode was Swamp Diamonds, post segment, prologue. Tom and Crow obsess on the Elias Sandoval episode of Star Trek, and Joel must make Spock mad in order to get them out of it.
Reflections. With their portrayal of Star Trek, you could always get a sense that is like, even just on occasion, you just were not surprised that they would sneak in a little Spock or a Shatner kind of narration. Because that's just the kind of movies that they were watching. And
Play It Again, Sam, has never said in Casablanca too. There's a lot of that happened. It's stuff just folklore. There's a little folklore.
Yeah. You're doing riff on a popular movie. Yeah.
Or you claim you saw the guy die in the Dick Cavett show when it was never aired, but people said they saw it, you know, probably because they heard about it, you know. That's funny. That actually did happen, but they never aired it. You know, somebody died in the middle of the show.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, so stuff that doesn't exist, but it might as well have because it's such folklore. So,
and I've had arguments with people that say they were at the last game at Tiger Stadium I was at, and you were there the day before, man. But you can't. If you think of the, you're not gonna argue, you know.
Right. Oh God. So I feel like this is kind of a wrap for Joel's era. You have any closing thoughts on this section before we move on to the next era?
Just quick notes. Warrior of the Lost World. That Paper Jace guy phones it in, which makes
David worthless.
Oh, he's and that robot was as annoying as hell.
Right.
Tweaky or whatever. And then also, I love the there's a great musical skit in Secret Agent Super Dragon when Crow's
playing. That's what I like too, is this earlier five seasons, they also, what I thought was really underrated for a lot of the show, and still had it throughout Comedy Central and on occasion on sci-fi, but not as much. They kind of went back to just the monster movies and weird paranoia thrillers, but and detective movies. But I always dug the spy movies because sometimes they're incomprehensible and other times they're just fun, but they're just goofy clothing and not much of a plot, but they would always just joke about how there's so much creeping around and being sneaky. When are we going to see a plot reveal?
Yeah, I know. So
some of what could work as a James Bond movie, and others that would probably just absolutely fail. That would just, everyone would walk out because they're just bored.
Yep. Now when Mike took over, I was...
Hold on. That's the segue. Remember, we're dividing these, so...
Oh, okay.
I mean, unless you want to...
What do you want me to just finish talking about the Joel years, or...?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Sorry, you gotta edit now.
Okay. So, closing thoughts.
Those were pretty much it. I had several people over to watch the last Joel episode, and I don't think most of them got the show. You know, and
which is such a shame because Mitchell is a great episode.
Yeah,
and yet it's kind of sad because you're like, Joel's escaped in an escape pod.
And then they did a brilliant 2001. Take off with Gypsy, you know, even to the, I think even had a shot almost identical to the computer in 2001, watching the astronauts with Gypsy. Remember they did a close up of Gypsy's face, and yeah, and it was, wasn't it, Gypsy thought one thing and it was actually something else, or I can't remember.
Gypsy said so much stuff that never ever got even shown and talked about, but it was always fun just saying, what is she talking about, and looking up what she's saying, and how she had a obsession with the actor Richard Basehart, and and it was like, I'm surprised, given how he starred in anything, how none of his movies appeared on here yet, not even Riff Tracks. But yeah, I mean, they've done all kinds of TV shows at that point, like Master Ninja and Fu Manchu and Teenage Cannon.
I had to post a still on the Mystery Science Theater page, Deep 13 House of Mystery Science Theater on Facebook, of credits for a Columbo episode, because Richard Basehart was in it. The one where he goes to London.
Oh, wonderful.
So I said, I bet Gypsy saw this episode.
I'm sure she did.
Oh, didn't Joel mention his favorite movie? It was The Seven Faces of Dr. Lau. Was that the exact title? In his message to the bots?
I think so, and I had to look it up. I'm like, is that an actual movie, or is he making shit up?
No, that's an actual movie, because I have seen that movie. That's one of the few movies I've seen in reference to Mystery Science Theater. I haven't seen that a long time ago. It's a real bizarre, it's like a circus, Chinese circus movie, but it's a, I think Tony Randall plays, here we go. Tony Randall plays in heavy makeup, he looks like Joel Grey or something, playing a Chinese man, leader of this, which is, you know, it's not as bad as Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's, but it's close, you know. Stuff you would never get away with today, you know. I don't know why that happened, and, you know, with Jewish people playing Indians and Westerns and stuff like that, you know, just crazy stuff like that back in the old Hollywood. Anyway, that's a little bit of a weird tangent I got off on, but anyway.
Not good. So, but, pretty strong first 5 years, you'd say.
Yeah. Or four and a half. Well, yeah, four and a half, because Mike shows up in the middle of season five. But yeah, I know what you're saying.
Okay, all good. And yeah, from that point on.
Joel, I didn't bring this up. Joel is kind of the father figure of the three hosts. Well, of course, he invented the robots and everything, and he's like the more of an authority figure than the other two, even though he's a little spacey. And I've heard people say that, oh, he's probably high or something, and I don't think that. I think he's just, his character's personality, well, he's stuck in space, you know, and he plays that well, you know, he played that well.
Do not attempt to adjust your TV sets.
It's Mystery Science Theater 3000, the only show on television made for the cheese lover in you.
Yeah, I thought I'd take Thelma Lou over to Mount Pilot for a picture show.
Do you like long walks on the beach? Chinese food, mushing up your bananas?
Mystery Science Theater 3000. It's like watching cheesy movies with three of your funniest friends.
Check it! Finish it! All the way!
Watch it. Saturday at 7, only at Comedy Central.
So here we go with the Mike era. So Mike lasts from seasons halfway of season 5 to season 10. So when you got onto this, Mr. Insing, different Mike is reviewing Mike. So when you tackled this, did you react to it right away, or did you just understand, is like, okay, different personas, got the head writer of the show is on here, and now it's his turn to kind of shine?
I just was just glad the show was going to keep going. Okay, when the new host came out, okay, we're gonna have a few more years now, you know, so it was good. I didn't really have the Joel versus Mike thing, and my name's Mike too, which helps, right? And it's funny because I actually, years ago, when Facebook was starting up, Mike was on there, and I don't think he is anymore. But
no, he doesn't have time for social media. And
no,
I actually, that this show was making use of the internet. I know he did gaming, like he had he challenged a bunch of fans in the audience to a game of Doom at one of the conventions. They had two successful conventions, one which Kim Cattrall, who, you know, Tracy talked to death about during Jolier's, attended, and so that was fun.
She got a kick out of his skit with Krog about her, and I guess she befriended Trace a little bit. Kim Cattrall actually did, yeah. I've heard about that.
Yep. And but yeah, he instantly, just from that point on, he's just like, he's on top of it. He's doing all these other sorts of trashy movies, and you still got Trace and Frank as the Mads, who are, again, you know, Dr. Forrester is just getting even more playful, and I like how just kind of Mike, he just always was just casually just reacting to him and just doing dim-witted shit, like, oh, okay.
Now, early on, the first few episodes, I thought Joel didn't do this. Mike would, you could see him looking at the camera, and I think he got over that. It's like, and it kind of took you out of it a little bit, but he got over that quickly.
I think he didn't want to.
Yeah, Joel was just kind of, you felt like he was on the ship, and you could just see Mike like, okay, how's this take? Because, you know, maybe it's just me.
Because Joel had already said he didn't feel like he was much of an actor, and yet Mike could easily be an actor, yeah. But yet this was his first time actually being on camera, so.
Yeah, and I think maybe it was just because it was a different host, and you noticed. You were watching, maybe I was watching him more.
He was being a trooper, but you could feel the pressure was on because he also realized, hey, I just can't do what you guys are doing with the skits, so how about I do my own shtick and we just try that, you know?
We'll return after these messages.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin puff, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pox disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that. Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get out of.
Unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist. Watching this film again, I had all of this, like, little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history
up.
Doll, yeah, popping up
absolutely.
At you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you know, couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was
going
to be a rough
movie.
How
did you watch this shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
Hey, everybody, I'm Corey.
And I'm Zach. And we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.
It's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a couple brews, baby.
We love good movies. We love the bad ones too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh yeah.
Everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. With a one-liner plot holes and gratuitous boobies, it's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy.
At EILFM.podbean.com.
We now continue with our program.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.